not entertained!
Hello world, this is David Crowther welcoming you to History in Technicolor, and I have been joined in our world by...
me, Wolf O'Neill.
Wolf O'Neill, excellent. That's the two of us, we're together. Now, Wolf, I have an initial question for you, which will become, the reason for which will become clear. Are you a Yorkist or a Lancastrian?
Because I don't fully understand whose side either is on, I guess that I'm on whichever one is Henry VII, which maybe is...
Lancastrian.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's the one I meant.
That's it, Lancastrian. Yes, my my mother was born in York. My father was born in Cheshire, and therefore always considered himself part of the White Rose County and side, whereas my mother, of course, was a Red Rose Yorkist. So it was important in our household to a degree. Nobody killed each other, obviously. But I have always been a Yorkist, or at least I was until we got to Richard III in the history of England, to which we'll come later. Anyway, gentle listeners, you may be wondering why on earth we're blathering on about White and Red Roses. And the reason is that we are here today to review the new film, The Lost King. We're trying to... We're trying to sneak in really quickly because it works so well with The Dig. So hopefully it'll work well with this one. Okay.
And it's another archaeology movie.
It is another archaeology movie, which is good. This is a great theme, isn't it? We'll have to have a strand on archaeology.
I was considering proposing, I think it's the 1999 movie, The Mummy with Brendan Fraser.
Ah, I love that movie. Rachel Weisz, isn't it? Yes, I think it's a great movie there. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of old Tutankhamun things, aren't there? What was that one with what's name? Who's the guy who uncovered the... I've gazed on the face of Agamemnon. Carter. Howard Carter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Howard Carter, anyway. Let's stop blathering. We are gathered today to talk about The Lost King, which is a new movie written by Stephen Frears, I think. It is directed, or maybe directed by Stephen Frears, pardon me.
Written, I think, by... it was written by Steve Coogan.
Excellent, and Jeff Pope. And one of the executive directors is somebody called Philippa Langley, which we'll come to. Now, Wolf, what is this film about?
Okay. I thought that the film was about finding new love and purpose after a divorce.
Really? Excellent. Excellent.
Crafting your own story against the odds.
Excellent. Oh, that's very good. That's very... what's the word? That's very edgy. Wolf.
But I do also think that there's a very... like obvious strand of the film, which is about the discussion of judgment and how we perceive of others with a specific connection to disabilities.
Good Lord, how interesting. Right, well, I think this film is about a wrongly maligned and denigrated hero who's ignored and sidelined by history. A film exposing the evil of the winners and righting an old wrong. And finally, at last, glorifying the greatness of that brave and true leader against all the odds.
What's fun about this is that everything you're saying also equally applies to Philippa Langley.
It applies solely to Philippa Langley. Damn, you saw through my cunning ruse. I worked really hard on that sentence to try and make it ambivalent as to who it could be. Yes,
well, the movie clearly conveyed that message, so we both took that from it.
This is a film about the hero that is Philippa Langley, although some bloke called Richard III also appears in the film being dug up. So that is the story. The story is essentially about Philippa Langley's dedication to finding where Richard III might have been buried, involving a team, an archaeological team, raising funds to try and find the long-lost king, and eventually, amazingly, finding him. The film's got a great cast. Two of my favourite actors, Sally Hawkins as Philippa Langley, and Mark Addy as the archaeologist Richard Buckley. It's also got Steve Coogan. chap called Harry Lloyd acts as Richard III, looking spookily like Tom Hiddleston, didn't he?
He was giving me a bit of like a knockoff Michael Fassbender as David in the Ridley Scott Prometheus movie.
So he looks like anybody except Harry Lloyd, essentially, is what we're saying.
But I get the Tom Hiddleston impression as well. I see that.
I was convinced it was Tom Hiddleston. I kept on thinking, well, I'm going to say how little use they made of Tom Hiddleston in this film until I realised it wasn't Tom Hiddleston.
He was the one in Game of Thrones season one.
Oh, is that right? Has everybody been in Game of Thrones? I mean, I've been in Game of Thrones several times.
Oh, yeah, because Mark Addy was in Game of Thrones as well. It's a season one reunion.
He was the original Targaryen, wasn't he? Or whatever. Or...
He was Robert Baratheon.
Ah, that's the one, Robert Baratheon.
And then this other guy, he plays Daenerys' brother, and Viserys, I think, and he gets killed in season one. They both do. Oh, spoilers, I guess, but...
Indeed. My trouble with Mark Addy, although I love him dearly, I cannot watch him in a film without waiting for him to wrap himself in cellophane and eat a Mars bar in a shed.
Because he does that in Full Monty?
Because he does that.
I thought you were going to say, I spend the whole movie waiting for him to take his clothes off.
Really not. I mean, he's a nice bloke and all, but, you know, really not. Anyway, so that's what it is. The reviews have been quite interesting. So I've read three reviews, actually. Two of them have been sort of meh. On Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, I think it's 68%. And then one of them in The New Statesman was very much along the lines of writing a wrong and subversive and all the rest of it. So quite liked it, was very much on board with the whole thing. So it's described somewhere as a comedy drama. What oeuvre or category would you put it in, Wolf?
I mean, either comedy or drama.
Well,
or a different...
Comedy drama is what they describe it as.
I think that's fair. When we get to all the things we liked about it, I think that the comedy is the element that elevates the film somewhat, the material.
Okay.
So yeah, comedy drama sounds fine.
Right. Very good. And
do you agree?
I think I'm going to come to that at the end, or at some point along the road. So. Because actually, I was never quite sure of the tone that the film was trying to achieve. You know, was it being humorous? I assumed so because of the constant appearance of Richard III in odd situations and a slightly cutesy feel to everything. Or was it supposed to be celebratory, you know, the triumph of this extraordinary discovery and the intricacies of the historical detective work that went into it? Or was it the triumph of good over evil, as you were saying? You know, Richard's final triumph over the Tudors at last, Philippa Langley's triumph over the evil establishment. Or was it supposed to be a feel-good film for all those reasons? And I found the tone of it slightly disconcerting. I don't feel it hit a groove.
It is a weird mix of a bunch of everything you've said. It is hard to pinpoint.
Yeah. That's interesting. So there is a rule on that Mark and Simon have, the great Mark, I might say, that of the six laugh test. So for it to be a good comedy, you have to have at least six laughs. Against that, what did you do? Give yourself a score. How many laughs?
I probably had one good laugh.
Okay.
But I had a couple where I was like, nods of approval.
Okay.
That's a joke.
Right.
That's a joke. Nice one. That is a joke.
One. I sort of smile.
There was a few where I'd hear other people in the audience laugh, which is always a good sign.
Nobody laughed in the Henley Regal, I have to tell you. Can't remember any of them.
A tough audience.
A tough crowd. There weren't very many of us, actually, to be honest. Okay, so I laughed once. And I did chuckle a few times. The chuckles mainly actually came from her children, funnily enough. I thought the children worked really well. The family was rather nice. They were quite funny children. They did funny things. And that was For me, actually, that was the best thing about the entire movie. But, you know, it was. I quite like that. And then the other time I laughed, or the time I really laughed, was when she was on her high horse again about how horrid the Tudors were. And she showed a picture of Richard III and said, look, the horrible things the Tudors have done to this picture, which was absolutely true. They did do this horrible thing. They made his lips thinner. And she showed a really ugly picture of Richard III looking evil. And she said, look, here was the original. And she showed a really ugly picture of Richard III looking evil. So I laughed out loud at that point, and silvery heads turned in my direction in the Henley Regal in outrage. Because I thought it was just very funny. You know, here's one evil. There's not. Anyway, if you have to explain your jokes, you're in trouble. So I'll stop.
I think I probably laughed at Steve Coogan was what made me laugh, but maybe not necessarily sometimes out of like historic respect for things that he's done that have made me laugh before. And seeing Alan Partridge in him, certain line deliveries would occasionally give me a chuckle, kind of retroactively or via that like tangent. And so there was some comedy there, but then because also his character was a bit horrible, it would always undercut the jokes and you'd then be like thrown off again.
Yes, none of the characters are really very likable, are they? Which is quite interesting. Yes, I never did Alan Partridge, really, because I was, in fact, Alan Partridge for several years of my life living in a travel lodge in Harlow. So it always felt a bit painful. Whereas I think he was living in a travel lodge in Norwich, wasn't he? And so I felt, you know, it's too soon to get over that period of my life. But yes, he did crack one good joke at the beginning where I think Philippa asks if, she's complaining about being at work. And he says, what's the problem? And she says, oh, it's because I haven't got a penis. And he says, well, you can borrow mine because I'm not using it very much at the moment. And that was quite funny. I thought that was a bit of off-the-cuff wit, it sounded like.
The trouble is, the bit that I liked the most is the bit that was in the trailer, and I always used to laugh at in the build-up to the movie, which is when he comes in and the kids are playing, they're watching football really, really loudly, and he has to interrupt them. He's like, boys, boys, your mother's found Richard III. And it's the juxtaposition, which I appreciate. Even if it's not, like, laugh-out-loud funny, the information that's revealed, I'm just telling you how you construct a joke, but...
Yeah, no, that works quite nicely. Although, of course, in the film, of course, since we've been talking about Richard III the whole bloody time, actually that passed over me completely. Whereas I can see in the trailer it would work because you haven't been building up to the Richard III reveal all the way. You haven't seen the story. Anyway, so there were some funny bits in it and there was some feel-good around the family, I felt. In general, though, if I'm going to say my big line, probably too early... If it's described as a comedy drama, I would describe it as a comedy which isn't comic and a drama which isn't particularly dramatic. I found it switched between them uncomfortably, never really managed either of them.
Savage.
Quite savage. It's going to get more savage, actually, Wolf. And so I think you probably need to take me down at some point. You know, sit me down, put a wet towel around my head.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to try and be a voice of, like, balanced reason.
Throughout. Okay.
So I think that maybe we should, we should talk about the film now, but we should talk about the positives of the film.
Yes, okay, let's do that. Right, should we go on to the negatives now? Joke, just a joke.
And in your eyes, more jokes than the film has.
Actually, there was another good joke, which was, so she's trying to find experts about Richard III, and she calls an amateur historian on Zoom, and he comes up and he looks a spit of Richard III because he's got a Richard III haircut. And that was a really good gag, and actually I did chuckle at that point too. But then she flogs the joke by saying, oh, have you got a Richard III haircut? He said, oh yes, I do, and all those things. She says, right, the dead horse is now being beaten. Stop beating the dead horse.
And while I see that, this is what I think the comedy in the film is. It's not really laugh-out-loud comedy, but it's a slightly dry humour where there's this slight sense of something odd happening, like, at all times, and that you can't always tell if it's comedy or not. And I think that's not unique to this movie. I think that is, like, a type of comedy. And you're not always sure whether you should be laughing. And if they played it dead with just the wig, that's one thing. And then they add a second joke to it, which I still appreciated, where she raises it, which is what we're all thinking, and she's like, oh, is your hair... do you have that hair because of Richard III? And then I thought his response was quite funny when he was like, yeah. Like, it was like glaringly obvious that this was why he'd done it.
Maybe
it's not coming across.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I just got it that he answered seriously. Yes, I like to, you know, blah, blah, as a dyed-in-the-wool ultra-serious Ricardian, because they are ultra-serious about their stuff. So I didn't get that, but maybe that's me. Okay, so the things that you liked, Wolf.
Right. Sally Hawkins is a god.
She is, isn't she? I mean, she really is.
She elevates all of the material around her, and the film wouldn't stand a chance without her.
Yeah.
She's absolutely incredible, and she somehow manages, against some of these other issues that will come up later, she manages to convey like a true sense of pathos, and I'm invested in her as an individual and as a character, and she makes me care more about Philippa because of the work that she does in this film. And I think all of the enjoyment comes from her, like, the whole way through.
I think I'm going to put it slightly differently and say that, as far as I'm concerned, she did the best of a bad job, and she did as much as any living human being could do to make Philippa Langley an attractive character.
Okay.
You're going to have to take me down.
No. I'm happy to... Because I'm sometimes the negative one, so I'm happy to leave you do that.
You've never been negative in your life. Well, actually, you were negative about Thomas More and A Man for All Seasons, weren't you? Said he was terrible to his family. I've never forgiven you quite for that.
We lost some listeners because of that.
Yes, we did, didn't we?
And I was very mean about Beethoven.
Yes, you were thoroughly rotten about Beethoven, although you had a point, to be honest. You know.
So I see all of your points. I could be harsh about this movie, and I will have some things to say later. But my general perspective is that it's almost too nice and well-intentioned to be something that I'm actually too mad about.
Okay.
It can be... It's like, it's fine. But I have some... Like, we talked about the humour. I appreciate it.
Appreciated. Unlike you, David. Because I'm sensitive. Sorry, carry on, Wolf.
There's a sense of whimsy in this film, which it doesn't... I wish it played into it more, and sometimes it clashes, I will admit. But I quite like, and it's because I'm trying to be positive and open-minded, because I'm... Anyway, I like the visual appearance of Richard.
So did I! No, I really liked that. I thought it worked absolutely fine. Some people have moaned about it, saying, they flog the joke, keeps coming up in funny places. Not funny. I thought it was great. I thought it worked really well into the whimsy, as you say. I don't think they overflogged it. And it was, you know, it was just sort of funny and amusing. And, you know, I liked it. I thoroughly liked it.
And I think because they don't play it, it's not a complete comedy. There is actually this slightly haunting sense of sadness that exists throughout the film. Around Philippa, and some of it comes from this connection that she has with Richard, which is a little odd. And this vision she keeps seeing, sometimes the scenes don't always play as comedy. I think there's much you can do with it. And I think it's very Shakespearean that, and it's for a number of reasons. A, in the play, I'm pretty sure Richard is haunted by his ghosts. Of the people he's killed.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. And just ghosts and apparitions and are always important throughout so many Shakespeare plays that I love the thought that for this woman, he then appears as this physical presence of sorts that guides her on her journey. I think that's a nice little touch. I think it does add something to... It's a film about digging up a car park. I was thinking about The Dig a lot, and I was like, the scenery in this film cannot compare. This isn't the glowing fields, the sun's rays on Sutton Hoo, this nice little cottage.
It's true.
Everyone in their like period clothing, This is modern day Leicester city centre, social services car park, and it's raining. This type of archaeology is not pretty.
Yes, I can agree that they're never going to get to sort of elegiac that you get in The Dig.
And as a result, I think they have to brighten up a lot of it by having Richard in his, you know, bold outfits with his course. It livens up train journeys from Edinburgh to Leicester and walks past like a Lloyd's pharmacy. It's just the film is stuck with its locations, and it's something that adds to the film and helps elevate it.
On behalf of everybody in Leicester,
mm-hmm.
can I just take your dissing of our fine city?
I thought the city looked
with the
nice.
Strongest objection.
I thought the city looked nice, and I thought it was a handy little tourist information ad for both Edinburgh and Leicester.
That is certainly true. That is certainly true, which is probably one of the things, I suppose, that in the end they're complaining about. Okay, so I agree with you on that.
I have a few more things.
Okay, I have some positive things to do.
Okay, you go.
Although there was one problem with Henry Lloyd appearing as Richard II. At one point, she asks him whether he killed the nephews. And that was the most cop-out scene of the whole bloody thing. I mean, because he doesn't answer the question. So what are we supposed to think about that then, anyway? And they're not shy of dissing the Tudors and every archaeologist they come across and every historian they come across in every other moment. So why doesn't he answer the question and say, no, of course I didn't kill the nephews? Anyway, sorry, I went on to bad things, didn't I? I'm supposed to be on good things.
Well, it's an interesting point. I think we should bring it up later. Okay. What is the film's view on Richard and the history related to him and its view on Philippa?
Is that in any doubt? But yes, we should. You're right. We'll do it in the historical verity thing. Okay.
To me, that scene is more interesting because this is not her... She's having a moment of doubt. She's suddenly wondering. And when she asks the question, Richard's response is her own... Because he is her. It's her having an inner monologue with herself. She is suddenly wondering, did Richard kill these children? Is my understanding of Richard wrong? Is he actually... a lot of what everyone says he is, and he's this like evil person, and I've become infatuated with this person who did these dastardly deeds, and she loses faith in her mission. Does she want to find him? Does she want to find that truth, if that's true? It's just like the foundations of this world that she's created are crumbling, and that doubt comes across in that interaction, rather than to me it being, or as you saw it, like a cop-out from the film. It could still be that. But I always try to bring everything back to Philippa, which is what the film is really about. Mm-hmm. And Richard is this like conduit for her to go on this journey of kind of this recent journey of discovery and kind of finding new purpose and identity for herself.
Yes, okay. I think that's a very intelligent way of looking at it and far more intelligent than I'm capable of. So, yeah, I mean, okay, good. I mean, that gives the film a good deal more subtlety than I thought it has, which is great.
Although as we discuss the history later, I'm coming at it from a perspective of I know very little and I'm not truly invested in any side.
Oh, but that's fine. I don't think this is a historical thing. You know, it's about the film, and I think that's
okay.
Very good comment. And yeah, probably you're right.
Keep going with your positives.
Okay. I liked it when they got to the historical research bits. They're clearly, for my taste, there clearly was not enough. But I realise that they have to think about whether the audience is going to live with lots of historical research bits. But for me, you don't see any of the real craft. There's a little bit about finding the map and having a look at it and trying to work out where it might be.
A great sequence.
Which is good. There's nothing about, but then there's not much more than that. You don't hear anything about the complexities of doing the actual digging. You're left with this impression that it's all about a feeling. And I think one of the things about this film, which does annoy me a little bit, is, oh, we're supposed to take seriously now that people have feelings. And that's supposed to direct academic research. And I don't think it does. But I liked that bit of it when they investigated the map and she talked about, you know, where she thought it was and how she'd found out that thing. That was great. And I just wish there'd been more of it. But I can imagine a non-archaeologically engaged audience would probably tire quite quickly. So it's fair dues, I suppose. I thought the Ricardian meetings in Edinburgh were good. They worked really well. They were an engaging bunch. They were quite eccentric, and that was nice, and that sort of fed into the whole whimsy of the movie. So I thought that played quite well. And as I say, I thought the kids were nicely done. Also, it's probably worth noting that in terms of villain, Lee Ingleby did a great job. He was impressively unlikable. So those are my good ones. All right, your good ones.
I don't have too many more. I've mentioned most of them. I think there's some tension, reaching here, some tension that is created over the dig.
They find Richard. Who knew?
She actually had to face a lot of obstacles, and the chances of this discovery occurring are so slim that it is nice to get wrapped up in the possibility and kind of seeing them kind of fighting through all these steps to get to this end point. There is some tension created there in the story. It's not incredible, but it does something.
I mean, I read this in all of the reviews that I read, actually, the two sort of not very positive ones, that, this film lacks dramatic tension. It doesn't need tension, does it? This film is a comedy drama. It doesn't need tension, as far as I'm concerned. It needs humour. It needs a good story. It needs feel good. It had the whole thing about it should have been that amazing discovery. All the work that led up to it, you know, the can we, can't we type stuff, I suppose, is about tension. And then this fantastic thing, they absolutely find it. And for reasons I'll go on to about my negatives about the movie, when they were revealed, I didn't give a tinker's curse. And any feel good I felt was completely washed around by the sour, toxic stench of martyrology and victimology. And I just didn't want to share in that joy because it was all covered with bitterness.
Keep going. I think we should move on to the negatives. My positives are slight, okay? And we've hit a new point, and I think this is important. I thought there was just enough dramatic tension to keep me entertained for the movie and kind of learn some things I didn't know and find out a little bit more about Richard and Philippa. So I was like, it's serviceable. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's not a terrible film, although I probably should say that when I get to the... Actually, no, I think it is a pretty awful movie. There are some good things in it, as we have discussed. And it's probably... I accept this is probably my fault that, because I've researched it afterwards, I've got angrier and angrier, actually, as things have gone on. So when I walked out of the theatre,
yes,
I didn't feel terrible about it. I thought, well, you know, that's a couple of hours I'm not going to get back. But, you know, I had a nice ice cream and, you know, it was fine. It was kind of fine. And I got sort of angrier afterwards. The thing that I didn't like about the movie, coming back to that bitterness thing, and then we'll have to talk about the accuracy and historical record bit, but let's talk about this, the feeling of it first. The fact that, well, it's not particularly funny. There are some humorous bits in it. There's a little bit of historical work, but there's not much of it. And then you've got the triumph over evil thing. So there wasn't much, which for me destroys the possibility of it being a feel-good movie. So you've got nothing. The evil establishment were laughably evil. Mm. And it just went so far that I could not buy it. They were caricature villains. I don't recognise those villains in history. There was not a hint of humanity in them, with a little bit with Richard Buckley, when he says at least he feels guilty about it. I swear to say that the Lee Ingleby character, the head of history or whoever he was, was made to say that they'd decided Richard was still a usurper because of his crooked back. This is a ludicrously absurd accusation about somebody who is alive today. I find that I just found that absurd. I note actually that Richard Taylor, the actor, has strenuously denied it. So I don't know when to come on to all of the historical record, but so maybe now I just carry on. For it's difficult. Yeah. I cannot believe that Philippa Langley does not believe in all of this stuff and is simply making it up. But as we'll come on to, some of it is demonstrably made up or wrong. But I'm sure she believes it. And there are bits of it which are, you know, entirely believable. So I can absolutely believe that academics would take a very sniffy view of this amateur coming in, raking up all this Richard III stuff yet again. And I can imagine she got a lot of patronising and disinterested, uninterested responses. I can just, there's a bit where she's lectured to by, she's had a lecture about Richard III and the academic is very dismissive of her, very patronising and pompous. I can just about buy that. I don't think I could buy that real situation that he was really that unpleasant. But, you know, I can get the feeling of that and they tried to build it up. There's martyrdom everywhere. There's, you know, not even her husband believes her at the first, although he comes good at the end. Sorry, her ex-husband. Everything's bad for her. She's got this horribly, horribly lame line where she says, "I've got ME. It's a real illness, you know." Now, I recognise that for ME sufferers, that is a real issue, that people say, "Oh, it's not a real illness," and they don't believe them. So I recognise that's an issue. But the way it's delivered is pitiful. And then she's got a terrible boss. Things are all full of work. Oh, that's another thing. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. There is nothing holding Philippa up except the Ricardians. So, and there's something in that. And I just got tired of the martyrology. So, by the time we got to the big reveal, and hey, we found Richard III, nothing was good anymore.
I think the film struggles because I had kind of assumed, and it does it very slightly, but I am reaching, the Philippa character is a complex character. And there is something odd about this whole thing. And I was going in like, wow, I'm going to go watch a movie about this woman who fell in love with Richard III and then just like had a feeling where he was buried. I know that there's research as well, but at least from the trailer anyway, and is desperate to dig up this skeleton of this man that she's now in love with. And it's all like, that's kind of like a far-fetched story. Like, you wouldn't believe it ever happened. And so she must be a little bit odd. It's just too on her side and doesn't have faith in us as an audience to see the positives and the negatives, which I think this is my key point about the film. In addition to the fact that I think a lot, the script is bad and the direction is poor and a lot of the supporting acting is not good. And it feels like you're watching people read their lines in like a amateur dramatics kind of scenario. Yeah. Is that the film has this sense of black and white, which is odd because it rails against this idea of misrepresenting people and creating, which you've already raised. How does it take all these characters and make them like, on a scale, everyone's at 100%. There's very little grey area for people to embody. And so the villains are like all villain, or they get one moment of like something else. And the heroes are all like hero, hero, hero. Mm. And I, even with the Ricardians, the thing that I'm confused about is, why can Richard not be a bit of both?
Yes.
Why can Richard not have...
Yes.
done good things and killed the kids.
I mean, that comes up throughout. I think that's a really good point, and we bring up in the historical record thing that she keeps saying, "Oh, I'm going to find his body to rehabilitate him." Finding his body isn't going to rehabilitate him in any way. You know, and actually, I think it even comes out either in the film or one of the reviews that, well, that's just silly. It's going to do nothing of that, and he's. It's as though they are full of the outrage about the Tudors and the takedown of the Tudors about Richard. Because the Tudors, have to establish their own legitimacy. They can't have a legitimate ex-king hanging around in people's memories. And they're so full of that outrage, they think, therefore, that anything goes. They've had 300, 500 years of, you know, 300 years of whatever it is of outrage of the Tudors. So then they can be every bit as unfair and one-sided and non-analytical as the Tudors. And that doesn't wash. You know, it's neither one is acceptable.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that's most confusing. And thinking back on it, she spends the whole movie denying that he had a hump as it's part of the conspiracy against him. And then when she sees the hump, which, fine, it's scoliosis, and I understand their slightly ham-fisted point, although, actually, no, I don't, where they conflate Richard III with being disabled and being maligned for a disability and made fun of for that reason. Sure, I'm not suggesting someone with a hump should be made fun of, but it's all a bit reaching.
See, that's what the Tudors always did, because in those days it was acceptable. I think Shakespeare does it, of equating physical divergence or nonconformity with evil. And so that's always been very much of the Ricardian story, but people don't do that now.
But what's strange is, if Philippa knows that having a hump doesn't affect his personality at all, why does it matter whether he did or didn't? But she's vehemently of the belief that he never had one. Then when she sees he has one, she obviously is like, oh, that's fine. He's still Richard and I love him. But it's like a weird thing where the discovery disproves a lot of one point that she believed prior. And it doesn't really affect her world at all. And she doesn't then wonder, is there anything else that could be disproved about him that is of the polar opposite view to me? And I think, I don't know, just the whole thing, I just wish that there was more meeting in the middle and recognizing people for the... Maybe they even talk about it in the film at one point. I just don't know why people can't just be people. Why do they have to be evil? Why do they have to be good? And the film doesn't really land on that point and still seems to fall too much on one side.
It's a them and us story. And that is, to be honest, that is the Ricardian thing. That's what it's become. I shall tell you about the History of England poll, which was about Richard III, where we discussed whether he was a saviour, as the Ricardians believe, or a knave, an evil person, or a fool. And all of those interpretations seems to me are possible, and we'll find out later which one I think is correct and which one were actually the History of England brave listeners that they are all decided in a poll. Should we go on to historical record? I mean, have we trashed the film enough? No.
I think we can continue to do so while going through the historical record.
Okay. Yes, I don't think I've got anything else to trash it for that isn't the historical record. So when we talk about it as a historical record, its accuracy, as it were, I guess there are two elements to look at. One, how truthful was it about the story of the discovery itself? And then how truthful was it about the real Richard III and that? So I think I might start with the second first, because the first one's going to be controversial. I need to be careful that I'm not unfair. On the history of Richard III, then, this is unashamedly a partisan view, and actually I don't think it's necessarily wrong. This is essentially a campaigning video for the Ricardian Society. In a sense, there's nothing wrong with that, because after all, the Tudors have had it their way for several hundred years of campaigning. So kind of fine, but it would have been a better film for me if actually, as you say, they had admitted that there were things Richard could have done wrong or might have done wrong, rather than being supposedly a perfect example of kinghood traduced unfairly. In one thing, they are absolutely right in the film, that the Tudors and their servants have trashed Richard's reputation. Although it is worth knowing that Henry VII, who was actually a very fine king, incidentally, did actually raise a memorial to Richard III, which praised his bravery. I mean, it's pretty equivocal about his legitimacy, but it's not mean-minded, unlike this film, I have to say. There were some specific claims. Sorry, I'm warbling on, but I've got a few things I want to say. There were a number of specific claims that I remember made in the movie. It's got to be said that they say he's a good king and that sort of thing. Richard, of course, reigned for only 3 years and pretty troubled years because there were problems with his legitimacy. So he didn't have much chance to prove himself. So the evidence is thin. But anyway, they make some claims that he was a good king. For example, because he encouraged the press, and this is true, Richard did support free trade of the press, excluding it from protectionism. Having said all of that, with all of these things I'm about to say, the way Parliament worked in the 15th century was not a government which has a legislative programme and brings it forward and votes in Parliament, blah, blah, like now. What happens is that people come from the provinces, usually selected there by the magnates in the House of Lords, because that's the way society worked, and they come forward and they make petitions to the king. And it is then up to the king to say, yeah, I'm going to do these, I'm going to do those. So none of these ideas probably are Richard's actual ideas, though he gets a bit of credit for not nixing them and allowing them to go through and be approved. The only thing that Richard actually brings are things like the titulus regis, which were there to trash the reputation of his brother and the dynasty that he's replaced. Anyway, there's another law that gets passed, which apparently introduces the innocent and proven guilty thing. Now, I can't find any record of that. I read a book on common law once which attributes the first use of that phrase, innocent until proven guilty, in a court of law to one William Garrow in 1791. He told a jury that every man is presumed to be innocent until proven guilty. But even then, in 1791, it wasn't law. It first appears in print in the French Revolution. So I don't buy that one, that Richard III introduced that, but I'm happy to be corrected. Penultimately, the Court of Requests. It is much disputed about where the idea originally comes from, but yes, there is a line of thought that gives credit to Richard. The Court of Requests is a way, an equity court that allows very poor people to get access to justice. So that's great. And finally, that he strengthened rights of bail. That is true. That comes out of his one parliament, the 1484. So there's some truth about that, which is great. They then, quite often in the film, promote suppositions as facts, which is exactly the same as they accuse the Tudors of doing. So, for example, the one that got me crossest, actually, was Edward V would never have become king because he was illegitimate. And everybody knew it, sort of thing. This is absolutely untrue. Edward V, by the way, was one of the princes that he killed. He was the person that became king as soon as his father, Edward IV, died. There was a rumour about a pre-contract. It was very vague. There was no evidence of it. People didn't particularly buy it. There is no way Edward V's coronation would have been disputed or in any serious way whatsoever. Even Margaret Beaufort, whose son, of course, is Henry VII, had accepted that Edward IV was the right king and his heirs and was working with Edward and had got quite close to arranging for Henry to come back and rejoin society. She had bought it. She'd given up. That's fine. All she wanted was her son to come back. It's not until Richard III usurps the throne that she then cuts up rough and starts trying to get her son to be on the throne. Now then, I'm sure there are other things, but I may have forgotten what they are. So the idea that Richard was a good man and he's been falsely accused. So we had this debate on the history of England, I say, a knave, fool or saviour debate. So the story is Edward IV dies. Richard of Gloucester has been a very loyal friend to Edward and a fine servant. And that's one of the things going on here, I think, is that people have been mused about this good man with a great record, brave and loyal to his brother, who has been rewarded handsomely by his brother also. He's basically a satrap of the north. And yet suddenly he turns so bad. What happens is that he panics that his position in society and his power will be destroyed by the Woodvilles, who are the family associated with Edward IV's wife, Elizabeth Woodville. I think he panics. He seizes the person of the prince, Edward, and his younger brother, and incarcerates them instead of... And he pretends at the first that he's going to have them crowned. He doesn't. Basically, he usurps the throne. And however you cut it, Richard III usurps the throne, whether he was doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And I think he does it because he panics. He then murders William Hastings without trial. William Hastings is a councillor. He hauls them out of the council room and have his head cut off with completely summarily without any trial or evidence, just cuts his head off on Tower Green. So at very least, he's responsible for tyranny. Personally, I believe he killed the princes. Why didn't he produce them? It is possible, but highly unlikely, they both died of plague at the same time. There are vast numbers of abduction or escape theories, which are just conspiracy. We can't prove that it's Richard in a court of law, but I would say, beyond all reasonable doubt, and Occam's razor dictates, he killed them. But you don't need to believe that he killed the princes to know that Richard III was a usurper who then destroyed the reputation of his brother in order to try and legitimise himself by saying that his brother's offspring were all illegitimate. I think he also talks about his mother having an affair, but I could be wrong about that. From his actions, his dynasty, which was finally secure on the throne and has established peace, which England desperately needed after decades of war, and then he blows it all to pieces for his own personal gain. Finally, there's a sort of story about this that contemporaries didn't think he was a villain. Contemporaries did believe he was a villain, very many of them. They try and trash in the film, they're trying to trash Dominic Mancini's eyewitness account because it's most inconvenient for Ricardians. But actually, and I think they claim in the film that it's, you know, doctored by the Tudors. Dominic Mancini's account is written in 1483 before Henry VII takes power, and that's one of its massive values. Now, even if you disagree with some of the things it says about the princes, you can argue about, it is at least proof positive that contemporaries believed Richard was a bad man and a usurper, or a significant number did. Here ends the lesson. Basically, what we decided on the history of England was that he didn't necessarily set out to kill the princes, usurp the throne. He panicked and he kept on being led deeper and deeper into the mire by his initial action of seizing the person of the king. There we go. So, what's the summary of that? The summary of that is that this is a campaign video, and I don't buy all of the arguments. I buy some of them, but I don't agree in any sense with Richard's conclusion. And I come from the position where, as a kid, all the way through my childhood, I was a desperately enthusiastic Yorkist and was very cross about Richard's reputation as it was given to me. But as soon as you start looking at it, seriously, he does some extremely foolish things and some very bad things.
Part of my impression is that they use Shakespeare's Richard III, like the general everyday member of the public's impression of him, as the one they want to like tear down, rather than the historian's perspective of him, which is possibly a little bit more balanced.
I think they take down both, because the thing about trashing the Dominic Mancini, the thing about particularly about, well, contemporaries not thinking he was bad, the one about him being a good king, no historian is prepared to say, oh yes, he was a great king. It's unashamedly past. There just isn't enough evidence. It wasn't there long enough. you know, there are claims here which they often put forward as fact, or Sally Hawkins puts forward as a fact, which just are extremely arguable at very best. The thing about Edward V could never have become a king because he was illegitimate is just not true. I mean, they're referring to a rumour that did exist, but the nation would have had... the political estate would have had no problem accepting Edward V. There was no sign that they would have done.
Yeah, the film's kind of conflates the fact that she found his body against when no one else would believe her, with the fact that everything else that no one believes her about must also be true.
Yeah.
Does that...
Yes, I think so. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely what they do. I think we've warbled on for quite a long time, actually. I realise I've lost control and we're at 50 minutes, so I probably need
to
move on.
Tell me about the dick.
The modern thing. So, we've got this thing that everything the University of Leicester does is evil and is out to completely take all the credit and sideline Philippa Langley. And people like Steve Coogan have been very out there saying... Stephen Coogan, for example, apparently said, well, they made their own bed, they're going to have to lie in it. Well, he didn't say that, he said, and then he said something like, she wasn't there at the procession. Well, she was there at the procession, and I've seen a picture of her being there at the procession. So either they've been misled, or...
You've bought receipts, David.
Yes. I mean, the truth is, I don't believe that Philippa Langley made all this stuff up. I can... be absolutely sure that she felt patronised and possibly even sidelined. But I, from all I've seen, I do not believe that Leicester University behaved in the way this film presents it as. I don't know what more to say, really. I mean, that the one piece of evidence, loads of archaeologists both within Leicester but also without them have come forward saying, look, we never sidelined her, she was involved in all the decision making, she was even in the film. Buckley says, I've reserved your place at the high table. She chooses not to go, she goes to the school, which actually incidentally, when she does the presentation in the school, that is one feel good moment actually, where I've, you know, felt on her side for change, because, you know, that was nice and positive. It's difficult, but I do not believe in the extremity of the accusations against the University of Leicester. And it made me very cross, because these are real living, breathing people. And they've now got a film out there which is making some very harsh and, I think, unsubstantiated claims about them. And I just think that spoils the whole experience to me. I don't want to go to a movie that's supposed to make me laugh and make me say, how fantastic, what a great achievement, when it's trashing most of the people concerned.
I didn't know anything about the real history, but the ending just seemed implausible. Mostly designed for dramatic effect, and it is quite heavy-handed. Mm. And I was writing notes down like, did this actually happen? Because this seems odd.
Yeah.
So hopefully everyone can kind of see through it. As soon as you told me that Philippa was a producer, things clicked a bit.
This is an official view endorsed by Philippa Langley.
Yeah. So we're not going to get a film that particularly, or that would paint certain people in a more positive light and her in possibly a different light. It's going to be really supportive of her view of events.
Yeah, I don't object to that. You know, I can quite believe that she met partisan academics, patronising and all the rest of it, but she just overdoes it. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I completely agree.
I listened to an archaeologist actually called Mike Pitts, who's written a book about the dig. And it's a very good podcast, actually, on History Extra, if anybody wants to check it out. It's really interesting. It's about the archaeology, 90% of it. He saw a preview of the film, and when he talked about it on the podcast, he uses a phrase like the reinvention of history, and some things being patently not true. And I I quote, and he also makes the point that these are accusations against living people. And there's evidence that says some of the accusations are demonstrably wrong. I just don't think that the level of victimology was necessary in the movie.
No, I would agree. I think we should wrap this up.
Yes, I think we should wrap that up too. I have ranted enough. So, quality as a film.
I mean, it's not very good. But, and so I guess probably... if I'm being genuine, I would give it a 4.
Mm-hmm.
4 or 5. But I do think that it was... I had a nice time watching it, and I think a lot of our audience members would have a perfectly pleasant time watching it. And I wouldn't want to dissuade anyone who thinks they might like it or get something from it from watching it, because I think you still can.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 2, because when we come to our...
Yeah, go.
When we come to our would I recommend anyone to go and see this film, I think probably for the first time I'm going to say no, I wouldn't.
Mm.
It is okay. Not that the film is that terrible in terms of its construction. There are funny things in it. There are bits of feel good. I think some of the devices work quite well. And what Philippa Langley and Leicester University achieved together was an extraordinary achievement. Absolutely, you know, the most extraordinary archaeological thing I can remember in my lifetime. Watching this film just ruins that achievement. And I don't think it's worthy of being seen from the meanness of its spirit. So I wouldn't recommend anybody goes and sees it.
Fair enough.
The historical accuracy I'm going to give a 4 to. It's a bit difficult. I mean, some of the, you know, sort of the things about the life, some things about the archaeology are, you know, perfectly accurate. The story of, you know, what the Tudors do to Richard's reputation are entirely true. So, you know, it's not a washout, but it is very one-sided, as we've said, and ignores a whole lot of stuff. And as I've said, the historical accuracy of the events with Leicester University, I don't believe.
Makes sense. I agree.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to have been such an unpleasant person, and I'm sure many people will have a go at me for being unfair to Philippa Langley. And if so, I'm sorry. It's just that is how it appeared to me. So next time, I think we've got Gladiator. And after that, we're going to do Bright Star. Is that correct, Wolf?
That is correct.
Fine. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Sorry for being so grumpy. And we will see you to entertain you with Gladiator next time. That's goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me.
Are you not entertained?